what this could mean. And the oldest member of the Senate is the second in command of the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, and that's Dianne Feinstein. Will these hearings be put off? What about Amy Coney Barrett's own family, who didn't wear masks when President Trump introduced her last week?
There's been a huge amount of reckless endangerment, there's no doubt. And I think that if we were following the proper protocol, the Senate would not be able to meet, and therefore the confirmation would not be able to happen. I think we should be thinking also of the working people who have been exposed by this administration recklessly in the past few days, the drivers, the catering workers, so many people without their consent have been exposed, just as in the country. Think about the thousands of meat processing plant workers who were ordered to work under extremely unsafe conditions by this president because he believed that bacon was an essential service. So many people have been endangered by his policies.
We're going to have to end it there. And, of course, we'll continue to cover the story. The Miami Herald reporting that Chris Wallace notes members of the First Family waved off the offer of masks from members of the Cleveland Clinic once they sat down in the hall to watch the debate. That does it for the show. Naomi Klein, as well as John Nichols. I'm Amy Goodman.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of L'Arche Portland Benefit Celebration on Saturday, October 24th from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. This benefit will highlight the gift of individuals with and without intellectual disabilities. There will be musical performances, an auction, and testimonials covering the mission and impact of L'Arche. Again, that's L'Arche Portland Benefit Celebration, Saturday, October 24th, from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. You can find more information at kboo.fm on the right side of our homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01. It's Friday. Mind the gap. Stay tuned. We run this.
Hello, hello, and good morning. The world, the universe, Portland, Corvallis, Philomath, Hood River, and beyond. I'm Tammy. You're listening to The Gap on the other side of, I guess, wherever it is you may be, is Althea Billing, better half. How
hey.
Are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm fine, you know, just trying to tussle with this almond milk here, figure out if it's still good or not, but I guess as long as it's not dairy, it won't hurt me too much.
Yeah, I don't totally know the intricacies of whether or not a particular nut milk is still good. I haven't been blessed with that information.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it can solidify a little bit, which I didn't know could happen, but hey, every day I'm learning.
Come to think of it, I definitely had it like kind of congeal around some cereal I was having it with at one point.
So
is that your situation? Anyway.
It's a little less off-putting since it's not dairy, so it's kind of like, okay, I can deal with it. And in the studio is Sonia. Sonia, again, thank you so much for all of your hard work and connecting us to the world.
Speaking of connecting, we have a guest today who is waiting patiently.
Oh, perfect. Yes. Well, we'll just get a couple of housekeeping things out of the way. So in case you may or may not know, KBOO is still in the midst of its membership drive. And if you like what you're hearing before us, after us, during the weekdays, the weekends, the late night music stuff, which is kind of my favorite stuff too, then you can go onto kboo.fm and go to the donate button. Actually, when you go to the website, a prompt will immediately show up. Make it easy peasy for you to donate some funds to keep this free community resource free and community led. Althea, what's kind of your favorite thing about the programming on KBOO? You got a favorite show?
Well, do I have a favorite show? That's a good question. Obviously, Democracy Now, heavy hitter, Amy Goodman. I enjoy Democracy Now. I tend to turn people onto it, especially when they express some level of skepticism about other kinds of media. It's like, you know, Democracy Now, kind of holding it down. I would recommend it. So, you know, supporting Portland's home for Democracy Now is a great way to keep that programming on the air, make sure that it's available to all of our wonderful listeners in and around Oregon and Southwest Washington, but also, you know, the universe, satellites, internet, you know, all of those kinds of things. And it is really valuable. You also, you know, enable people to get to learn radio and get to put their voice on the air. So it's a really wonderful thing to support, and we really do appreciate every single person who's able to give whatever amount works for them. And we also have a little thank you gift if you give, not to the Gap, but if you mention us in your donation, and you want Tammy or I to record you some kind of voice memo, we'll
or
do
both.
It.
Both of us together.
Or both.
Simultaneously, yeah. We can edit
dual
stuff.
Dual vocal
for it.
Styling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We could be your outgoing voicemail. We could, what other occasions do you need a voice memo for? Sound effects. Yeah. Do you want
when you're
replace the Wilhelm scream with us? That could work. We could make some background noises, you know, it makes it sound like you're working when you're on a phone, when someone calls you and you're like, I don't want to talk to you right now.
Oh, nice. I'm going to write that one down for myself. I might just do that. You're brilliant. I like that.
Thank you. Soundscapes. We could do any of that for you. But
yeah,
if you go to kboo.fm, click on donate, or go to kboo.fm/give, you can support this wonderful community radio station that is a home to all kinds of voices, all kinds of eclectic programming that has something for everybody.
Yeah, something for everybody. And with that said, we'd like to get started with the program. The first half is going to be a live interview. That's right, live interview with Anne, who will share a little bit of her story. We'll go into it in a moment. And afterwards, after a very sweet little musical break, we'll get into part two of our discussion. And I'm sure a lot of people have some opinions about the happenings, election-related things, and, of course, some of the news that we have heard more recently, the president being, you know, getting sick. So that's unfortunate. Never good when anyone is sick. But yeah, without further ado, I think as soon as we have Anne on the line. Anne is a traveling nurse who was recently working in Northern California, and she was working when COVID first hit in March, beginning of March, and she has a really interesting story that, I'll just let Anne tell her story. Anne, are you on the line with us?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
So thank you so much for joining us. We're really happy to have you on the air. I guess if you want to just go ahead and get started on your story.
Okay.
Yeah, tell us about what happened.
Sure. So I was working for a small hospital in the Bay Area right when shelter in place started. I'm a surgical nurse, so I work in the operating room. And pretty shortly after shelter in place was announced, they also announced that they would be putting a hold on elective surgeries, which really affected my job. The hospital that I was working at was mostly elective procedures, so we went from really busy days to barely any surgeries at all. And because I am a traveler, a travel nurse, I don't have the same protection as the staff nurses that are union, who are guaranteed hours and guaranteed shifts. But my manager in the hospital said, we'll do everything that we can to try to get you guys your hours. So I was put into a general labor pool with some of the other travel nurses. And our main job at that point was to screen all the patients coming into the hospital. They shut down all the entrances to the hospital except one main door, and they had us sit at a desk and answer, you know, ask screening questions, and then triage patients accordingly. So things were very chaotic. It was right in the beginning. Nobody really knew, you know, how COVID was being spread, and it was just a very chaotic time. And there was a workflow in place for us to try to triage patients who were showing symptoms. It involved putting a wristband on them, having them put a mask on, and then escort them to a special room. I was getting very up close and personal with patients who were coming in exhibiting, you know, COVID symptoms. So I asked my manager if I could have an N95 mask to wear just to be safe. I have asthma, so I just wanted to be very careful when I was interacting with potentially, you know, positive patients. And the first day I wore the N95 mask, no issues. The next day, I got another N95 mask from my department. And at this point, everybody else at the screening table was wearing an N95 too. We just all felt like this is probably the safest thing for us. Some people were even wearing eye protection at that point. And about midway through the day, an administrator from the hospital came over to our table, and she had a box of surgical masks, and she said, everybody at the screening table needs to take off their N95 and put on this surgical mask. And I said, why? But can you explain to me why we're doing this? If we're already wearing a mask, why does it matter? Why do I need to change it? That doesn't make any sense. And she said, well, CDC guidelines and, the World Health Organization are saying that a surgical mask is enough protection. And I said, well, it seems like the CDC guidelines have changed only in response to a PPE shortage, not in response to clinical research or science. So I don't want to take off my N95. I have asthma. I want to be protected if I'm going to do this job. And she said, you have to take the mask off. Everybody here has to take the N95s off and put the surgical mask on. And I pushed back again, and I just said, I really don't understand why you're doing this. It just really does not make sense. And this is a really scary job that we're doing, and we all want to feel like we're as protected as possible. And she said, well, if you're refusing to remove your mask, then I don't know if you can do this job anymore. I'm going to go get your manager. So she went to get my manager, and I could see them speaking down the hall, and my manager came over to me, and she said, I'm sorry, but if you're not going to change your mask, you can't do this job anymore. And since this is the only work we have for you, is working at the screening table, you'll have to go home today, and we'll cancel your shift tomorrow. And then I will call you on Friday and let you know what's going on, if we have any more work for you. So Friday, I don't get a call from my manager. I get a call from my travel company, and they let me know that I had been released from my contract and I was no longer going to be working at that hospital. The official reason was low census, meaning there weren't enough patients to, you know, justify keeping me on. But because I have a good relationship with my company, and the point person that I've worked with for years and I are friends now, she said, unofficially, we got an email that said that you pitched a fit at screening and created a scene, and that's why you were let go.
And this was, you said, what, about 2 days after the incident happened initially?
Yes, this was two days after I was sent home early for refusing to remove the N95.
And at that point, was there a PPE shortage in your hospital?
No, because I asked the administrator that on the day that, you know, she wanted us all to change our mask, I said, is this in response to a shortage? And she said, no, we're not experiencing a shortage at this time.
Huh. And this was right in March. So I just want, you know, remind listeners that it was right pretty much at the peak when I think it was March 13th, Friday, March 13th, that Kate Brown shut down officially the city. And also that's when cable was shut down. So I can, that was like right really at the height of it. And I can't understand at all for the life of me why they would tell you to take the mask off. And for listeners who might not understand the difference between an N95 mask and a surgical mask, could you just explain a little bit what the differences are?
Sure. So an N95 mask is just a higher level of protection. It filters out more particulates, you know, viruses, whatever. We typically use them in the operating room when we're working on a patient who has tuberculosis or is suspected of having tuberculosis. So anything that can be aerosolized, you know, that's why we wear them. It's just a higher level of protection. It sits flush with your face. It's just a much better level of protection. A surgical mask is usually looser, there's gaps, you know, there's more opportunity for you to breathe in, you know, aerosolized particulates.
And is this something that you've heard other nurses experience, as far as, of course, there was a shortage that was, you know, well announced everywhere, but right in those initial few days, were you the only person that was let go? Were the other nurses at the hospital or other hospitals that you know of?
I was the only one that I knew of. I know that they tried to, I know they kept some of the other travelers on for longer, but I shared about, you know, my story on my personal, you know, social media pages. And people started sending me news articles and just stories that they had heard of other nurses who were fired or who were, you know, punished for speaking up about very similar things, either a lack of PPE or having to reuse it or, you know, just not having the appropriate protections in place. So, you know, I think that this was pretty widespread at that point.
Hmm.
And so in reflecting on it now, what do you think the reason was that that administrator, like, fired you over this kind of thing?
You know, I think and I was trying to get them to say this in the moment, and they didn't, but I really think the subtext was, we don't want to send a message to other staff members and to patients that this is that serious, maybe. You know, we don't want to incite panic. We don't want to make patients feel bad if they're coming in with these symptoms. And then also, if other staff members see you wearing N95s, then they're all going to want them, because they're going to say, well, these people they're not even taking care of patients. They're just screening them at the door. How come they get an N95 and I don't? So it could have been, you know, trying to stop a PPE shortage. I don't know. The administrator just kept saying, oh, it's CDC guidelines, CDC guidelines, and never really went much more in depth. But I felt like it was implied that it was a image thing.
And question, would a hospital like that be required to follow a CDC guideline when it's a downgrade of safety and there isn't a PPE shortage?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I'm trying to figure out, like, does the hospital have to toe the CDC guidelines when they actually don't have a PPE shortage and what is being prescribed is actually less safe?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, every hospital has an infection control department, and they are the ones that set the criteria for use of PPE, the appropriate PPE according to the clinical situation. And that's what I was told, that their infection control department was following CDC guidelines. These are now the new guidelines. Therefore, this is the new policy. But there,
those guidelines changed not long after, right?
Right, they did. I mean, 2 days after I was let go, everybody was wearing an N95. And then even still, in the 6 months since that started, I've gone back to work at another hospital, and just in the 3 months I've been there, I've seen several policy changes related to PPE. And you come into work and all of a sudden everything is different. And nobody can really tell you, I mean, they can tell you why, but, you know, I mean, at this point, some of it kind of feels like a guessing game.
I think you made a really interesting point where you said that the guidelines are a response to a possible shortage, not necessarily the science. And that's really troubling for me, and I'm, you know, not a medical person. So to you as a nurse, when you kind of realized that, or, you know, when you kind of dawned on you, like, how did that make you feel about, you know, the profession and, the coronavirus, just the whole ordeal?
I felt in that moment, I felt betrayed. And I felt like the hospital and the administrators were more concerned with the bottom line, maybe, than protecting their employees. And I think this is something that I've seen in my 6 years in nursing. Nurses, we're frontline workers. We spend more time with patients than, most healthcare providers, especially in the hospital. And we are the ones who bear the brunt of the nursing shortage, and the way that hospitals cut corners and cut staffing in order to meet their bottom line. And so that was something that I already had been feeling for years. And then to have this happen just felt like the ultimate betrayal. Like, I didn't matter. I wasn't important. You know, the work that I do to care for patients doesn't matter. It was difficult. I considered leaving the profession.
Yeah, I mean, being so close to the, in close proximity, you're, checking people in and stuff. I can't imagine any other position having to be the most protected, and you had mentioned in our conversation that all of the other entrances to the hospital were closed, so there was only one main entrance, right?
Yeah, so every single person walking through the doors of the hospital, whether they're coming in to go to the ER to get screened for symptoms, or they have, other illnesses they need to get checked out for, or they're there for a physical therapy appointment, or they're there for surgery. I mean, every single patient coming into this hospital had to pass through our screening process. So we were interacting with hundreds of people.
In hindsight, when you saw, like, I guess it was in April or some, around that time, where hospitals were overrun. I mean, in New York, we were seeing images of huge, like, coolers and, refrigerators and stuff being brought to evacuate the dead, and just seeing all of, like, what's, especially in New York, like, some of those images looked incredibly, like, apocalyptic. So as a nurse, again, going through what you went through in that initial, in the initial beginning of the virus, when you saw those images, did you, like, I don't know, did you get mad because you're like, well, I kind of know what's going on in there and this has been preventable? Or were you like, obviously as a nurse, you probably see, people, like your comrades, you're like, what, you know, knowing exactly what they're going through. I guess kind of a loaded question, but did you, like, how did those images make you feel? Did you feel like it was preventable, like going through what you went through, or you feel like they did the best that they could?
You know, preventable as in, like, less people in New York could have gotten sick, or preventable?
Yeah, or just with the initial, because this is what they're doing, you know, in, and again, Bay Area, lots and lots of people there. So, you know, if they wouldn't have the foresight, or just at least the care to, you know, arm basically their frontline soldiers with the best of gear, and that's, you know, happening in places like the Bay Area, then I just wonder to myself, like, is that, you know, how many other places have done that? And then you see images from New York, and I wonder, like, is that what we're seeing now, a result of that, like, mishandle, or that not really caring as much as you should in the beginning, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think was it the mayor of New York or the governor, you know, at the beginning when the Bay Area was going into lockdown, he was saying, go out to dinner, go see a show, you know? I mean, there was a very different response from that city as opposed to the Bay Area, thankfully, because we did not see the surge that New York saw. But, I mean, I was, you know, I'm on several nursing social media pages, and so I was hearing people's stories about working in New York during that time, and it was terrifying. And people, you know, nurses having to reuse their PPE, not having enough PPE, having more patients than is safe for the patients and for the nurse. I mean, just nurses being exposed, patients being exposed. I mean, just, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking, and it was very scary, because a lot of us in the Bay Area were thinking, oh, we're next. Like, we're going to have that surge, and we're going to be totally overwhelmed. You know, it's going to be all hands on deck. And that was a really hard feeling for me, because I thought, well, now I'm unemployed. And what if this surge happens? I won't be there to help. I'm a nurse, unemployed in a global pandemic, and there is a surge potentially coming, and I won't be there to help and do, you know, what it is. I became a nurse to take care of people, and I won't even be able to do that.
Yeah, that's incredibly heartbreaking. And it's, you know, you hear of all the shortages, and even before the coronavirus, you know, nurses, like we were talking, overworked, underpaid, and then to have stuff like that happen, I don't know, it just seems like a real, like, spit in the face, you know? Althea, you have any questions or anything you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about, you know, recently stories have been coming out about coronavirus burnout in the medical field. Have you seen that in your work since you've gone back to work as a nurse?
I haven't seen, personally, I have not seen anybody who has said, I'm leaving the profession because of this. You know, I've heard some nurses who have been in the profession a long time say, you know, maybe I will retire early. I know of several nurses who were pregnant who left and might not come back because of it. But I think that there will be an exodus from my profession because of this. I think that this was the final straw for many of us. And that's a shame, because we already have a nursing shortage, and it's projected to get worse. And, you know, that's just going to put even more strain on the healthcare system.
And we have, you know, the upcoming generation. I know that that's been a conversation ever since I was a kid. You know, they're saying, get into nursing. You know, there's going to be a certain age when there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be needing, you know, nurses and stuff like that. So it's really, you know, kind of scary to think about the future, but you can't, you know, you have, if you're not going to be protected during a pandemic, like, I can't, you know, I can't imagine how people are working, trying to rationalize this, because it really just doesn't seem rational at all.
Definitely not.
And one last thing that you mentioned that I want to ask you about is in the beginning of the story you mentioned that the other workers are unionized, and because you are in this special like traveling nurse position for the as a surgical nurse, I was wondering how do you see like that changing? Do you feel like, you know, maybe you need to like either become unionized or maybe try to work for an actual hospital so that you aren't kind of in this limbo, you know, in case something, you know, there is another surge or something like that? Like, how has your personal ability to like protect yourself, whether it is through a union or something like that, like how has it changed, if at all?
I have definitely considered leaving travel nursing and taking a permanent job at a hospital for that reason, so that I will have the union protection, because the nurses that I know that are in a union, when all of this started, many of them, you know, their hours were guaranteed, they found other jobs for them, they were able to push back against, you know, hospital management when they tried to say, oh, we're going to downgrade your PPE. You know, they had the power and the voice and the union to back them up and say, we're not going to do that, you know. And we just, travel nursing, it's not set up to be unionized, unfortunately. It would be a very difficult endeavor. So the easiest thing would be for me to take a permanent position, and I am considering that.
That's really interesting. I didn't even know they had, you know, traveling nurse agencies. It's really interesting. And during times like this, like I see the, you know, the benefit of both being able to be kind of like mobile and but also having that protection, like you said, of, you know, when stuff happens, at least you have that, you know, that body that can speak for you, you know, a uniform body. But we're getting right around to the end of the interview. Althea, I want to, do you have any last questions you want to ask or statements?
Well, Anne, we really appreciate you being here. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap it up and switch gears?
No, I just want to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to tell my story.
Well, thank you so much for, you know, for talking with us. And I guess, yeah, so you are working right now at a different hospital.
Yes, I am. I was unemployed for 3 months after that, after I was let go. And then eventually surgical cases started to come back. The Department of Health said that it was okay to resume surgery. So jobs started to pick up, and I eventually got another contract.
Well, we're super glad to hear that. And thank you for all of your hard work and keeping people healthy, alive, and safe, you know. And we just hope that you get treated, you know, properly going from here on out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. No problem.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you. We're going to go to a quick musical break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Thank you all for tuning in. This is The Gap. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is Althea.
Hey.
The pain is getting worse. wanna see no doc. I need attendance from my nurse around the clock. Cause there's no prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. Night nurse, only you alone can quench this thirst. My night nurse, all the pain is getting worse.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy. This is The Gap. On the line with me is Althea Billings. Althea, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right.
I'm well. I really enjoy that song. I know that we heard kind of like a very, I'd say, disturbing kind of story, you know, about some insides of what's been going on in hospitals post-coronavirus, or the beginning of the coronavirus, so I am glad that we got to listen to that song a little bit. Night Nurse, thank you, and so much. We really appreciate you sharing your story with us. Althea, did you check out those debates this week?
I sure did. Describe it in one word. Describe it in one word. Well, it feels like all the good words about it have been taken up, like, right after it happened. I don't know if everybody saw this, but on CNN, Jake Tapper called it a hot mess wrapped in a dumpster fire, wrapped in a train wreck, which I thought was very funny coming from, you know, buttoned-up news anchor Jake Tapper on CNN. I don't know. I wouldn't say that I was, like, shocked, as a lot of people seem to be. It was definitely like another level of badgering from Trump that we haven't seen, but we're also seeing him in a different position than we have previously when it comes to debates, right? Like, he's not on the offensive fighting against like the Democratic establishment of putting Hillary Clinton to succeed Barack Obama, but he's instead on the defensive and having to defend what he's done. And he kind of came out guns a-blazing, if you'll, you know, excuse the pun, and I don't know that it reflected very well on him right after, you know, flipping channels or whatever, right after Fox News, like, they said, like, oh, yeah, that happened. Good stuff. Okay, we're going to go to commercial. They, like, immediately went to commercial when that's, like, prime pundit time to tell you what it means and why your guy did better than the other guy. So I feel like that was kind of telling. I mean, obviously the polls haven't been great, weren't great for him before the debate and haven't been great since. What did you think?
Well, I did a Facebook watch party, which was really fun because, you know, like you said, I wasn't really expecting anything to be, you know, to get added to the conversation or for it to be a very useful, you know, thing to have happened. But, yeah, it was nice to see what my friends thought. It was nice to see what people, like, what kind of, like, you know, what kind of set them off or, you know, what they liked and what they didn't like. The first thing that people noticed was the huge giant eagle that was in the background that was surfing on an American, on like a shield that had the American flag on it. I don't know if anyone noticed that, but it was quite intense. And and there was a lot of conversation about the camera person's like angling and zooming in and zooming out and zooming in and zooming out. But yeah, it was unfortunate, but that's the best that we can do. It's the best that we have. Is this the greatest and brightest that this country has? I really don't think so. And I know government doesn't pay well, but you can make a real difference if you got into government and, you know, helped out. Because this is the best that there is right now. And I'm not saying, I'm asking. Yeah, he said guns a-blazing. He came in there. I feel like everyone maybe felt like they reverted back to being in the kindergarten and getting picked on for their first time. And because I was like, oh my God, I don't know. I think he was starting to talk about the new Green New Deal. And that's when I'm like, okay, time for a beer. Like, this is, yeah, this is just too much.
Yeah. Well, I think like for his the fundamental part of his base, like it didn't turn them off per se, but I wonder if there isn't like another subset who was leaning towards him, but then it's like, oh gosh, is that really what we're, is that how he's going to comport himself?
Like you said, with the RNC or the DNC, it's like, who is this for? And if this is for the undecided voter, well, buddy, I don't know, maybe you should like maybe you're just an indecisive person, period, you know, and you just have to deal with that. But like, I just don't understand what this was for. Oh, Sonia, did you watch the debate? Do you have any thoughts?
I did not watch them. My particular brand of masochism does not extend to that. And so I don't really have anything to say. I'll let y'all handle it.
Oh, sure, no problem. So I think that my favorite part Oh, sorry about that. I think I lost the call for a second. Here, I am back. Elsie, are you on the line with me?
I sure am.
Oh, sorry about
Hi,
that.
Hi, sorry I disappeared.
Hey, hey. Yeah, we were talking about the debates. I guess this is a sign for us to stop.
Pipe down over there.
But the last thing that I will say is it was pretty unnerving to hear the whole stand back and stand down, or stand down, stand back, stand. You know what I'm trying to
say. Stand back and buy. Stand in some direction, but it's not a condemnation. It's not a take a seat and also get rid of your beliefs kind of thing. So
I don't know if anyone likes to watch, let's say, both sides of the media, you know, what pundits on both the right and the left say, but a lot of pundits on the right are kind of like, yeah, that wasn't very good. So at least
it's an easy question.
Yeah,
yes or no.
People aren't trying to reach and just be like, that was amazing. Like, no one was happy with it. You know, they're like, all right, well, this person didn't collapse and this person. I was waiting for a fist fight, to be honest. But since that didn't happen and no one collapsed, I guess you could say that was an okay performance. But
yeah. My heart skipped a beat every time Biden stuttered.
No, he held his ground, though. He held his ground.
He did, yeah. I mean, I think it's hard. You know, it's hard to critique him for the performance because it's like, could I do any better? Can I think of anybody else who could do any better without totally stooping to his level? I don't know.
I feel like if you're running for the highest office of the land, you should be able to do that. But then again, you shouldn't be a, you know, this is the best that we have to deal with. So, like, you know, we can't really complain. This is of our own doing.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But like you say, Althea, and I'll quote you on this one, we deserve better.
It's okay to want more. I give you permission. If you needed permission from someone, I'm giving it to you.
I'm really wondering how these types of debates and, you know, the RNC, DNC, how they will change in the future, because a lot of people are talking about taking the, you know, that form of debate away, which I can see why, you know, I mean, you know, since we all watch the same thing. And it's like one of the few times where everyone's watching the same thing and most people see the same thing. So now that we're finally, hey, we all wanted, you know, common ground. We found it. Okay, we started there. So maybe...
common ground, that didn't go great.
That's where we're starting. and I'm really wondering if the, you know, just what this office will look like in the future, what the, you know, I mean, are we going to have YouTube influencers running for president? Because... you know, they got clout. They could if they wanted to. Why not, you know? I mean, will Kanye West actually run for president? Like, would the debate end up being a rap battle? Who knows? I don't know. But I don't see it staying this way, you know?
Yeah, politics doesn't have to be one normative argument that it shouldn't be like this. And if you want to, you know, rebut me on that, feel free. 503-231-8187 if you have
thoughts. This is a call-in show. 503-231-8187. We'd like to hear your thoughts and opinions. Althea, there's something else that we were going to mention here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you want to talk about the debunking thing that I found this week?
Sure, yeah. We love debunking.
Okay. We love debunking and, you know, fans of the show, hi, fans of the show. We talk a lot about, you know, having sort of fraught political discussions with people, people we might not agree with, and, you know, figuring out how to navigate those. And I know for myself, like, you know, some of the political stuff, like, it gets me hot, like, immediately. Like, immediately I'm angry and, you know, trying to figure out how to kind of calm that part of my brain. But this week I was in this election misinformation simulator that was talking about how the media should be going about debunking conspiracy theories and rumors and stuff like that, because there are a lot of them out there. And it was really interesting, but I got to thinking, you know, this could work for an interpersonal thing as well. And as we've talked about before, you know, when do you, you know, we have to be choosy about when we want to expend that kind of energy on. When do I actually want to sit down with you and engage in a potentially, you know, uncomfortable conversation about, you know, human rights? But there were like four main points that I thought were really interesting that I think, at least in my own life, like, I'm going to try to, like, stand in that when talking to people and having that be, like, the grounded space for it. So the first thing that they recommend, both for news organizations and what I'm recommending for people, is focusing on, like, the facts, focusing on what is true. And there's this interesting, like, effect that people have studied called the familiarity backfire effect, where if you... like, you want to avoid repeating a falsehood if you don't need to, because it'll get stuck in people's minds anyway. So even if you tell somebody 100 times, you know, if we want to go back to the birther conspiracy, like, Obama's not a Muslim, say that a zillion times. If someone, like, the knot might is not as likely to, like, stick in somebody's brain. And so if you come up to them on the street and you ask, hey, is Obama a Muslim? And you're like, yeah, I think I heard something about that. So avoiding, you know, is that isn't true over and over is a better way to, you know, kind of like a sidestep that sort of like rote, because it feels more true the more times you hear it. So, like, focusing on the facts, I think, is a good way. And, you know, coming with the facts, and if somebody's going to dispute the facts, then you know what kind of conversation you're having. You know, like, it's not a is this true or is this not true. If you're not going to take the facts at their value, then maybe there's different kinds of work that need to be done with that person. But the second point is making the debunk easy to process. So short, simple, sweet. I mean, that can be really hard to do. We are dealing with a lot of really complex issues, really, you know, everything is complex. Sometimes we just don't realize. But making whatever it is, the point that you're trying to get across, really easy to process. Because you don't want to, you know, overkill, of belaboring a point can also backfire on you. The third point is to avoid ridicule. So that basically means framing, like, the debunking of somebody's belief or a conspiracy theory in a way that's less threatening to that person's worldview, like, on the whole. And I feel like that one's kind of, like, intuitive, that that would be probably a better way to go about things. But even like media organizations will do stuff like that. We got a caller.
Hello, caller.
Good morning. I love the topic that you're bringing up. It's something that I actually think is, when we talk about fighting fascism, you know, or punching Nazis and all that, I think the best way that we can do it is with our words and discussing this. I don't want to say I know Joey Gibson very well, but he knows who I am, because every time he comes out, I confront him and the Patriot Prayer using their language, using the Bible, using all the tools that point out their hypocrisies. And a part of the way that it's so effective is when I'm able to talk with them, when I'm able to, you know, when any right-wing person is trying to share, you know, something, and if you're listening to them, it's so much more effective to be able to hear what they're saying and then be able to, and I'll be honest, I actually like conspiracy theories too. I think there's a lot of conspiracy theories that have, some seeds of truth into them. I think honestly, the conspiracy theory trend has been, this right wing agenda, which is, we're seeing play out. But when you know what the conspiracy is you're talking about, and you're able to be, I'll give you an example, the whole Pizzagate child, sex traffic ring, when you bring that up and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, and then they'll start telling you about it. Then you're like, oh yeah, and ICE has been systemically, abusing, these immigrants too. And ICE contracts through corporations who've been caught child trafficking. And then immediately you watch their head, try to spin around, and you can see the cognitive dissonance that they have to adhere to. And it's just much more effective, because I feel that when you bring up in a way that's inviting, I don't want to say inviting, but hearing them out is the first part, and then being able to convince them after that. It's a critical part in trying to change that dynamic, I feel.
Totally. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the topic.
Yeah, appreciate it. But yeah, going off of what our lovely caller just said, I think there's like a difference between meeting someone where they're at and kind of like getting down, I guess, into the mud with them, if you'll, pardon the metaphor there, and like getting all messed up yourself and turned around and not able to like defend what it is that is right and what you want to say to them. But that there is a way to, present it in a way that doesn't entirely challenge their worldview, right? Like, oh yeah, if what you're saying is true, then but what about this other thing that is also related, and that you should, if you care about this thing, you should probably also care about that thing. The fourth point, which I want to bring up really quick, is that you want to try to like answer questions that the debunk, or like correcting somebody on this idea that they have, answer the questions that might come up because of that. So like detailing the origin of where that rumor came from can be super powerful, because it gives you like something to hold on to, right? Like, for example, why the anti-vax movement gained so much ground? Why do we think that vaccines, like the polio vaccine, actually causes autism in children? Well, nobody had written about the polio vaccine for a long time. The polio vaccine works. We don't need to talk about it anymore. And so there was one study that has been, debunked. There's that one study that ended up coming up when people would search on Google, because there was like an information desert. Like, there just wasn't other things that would come up that would say, no, the polio vaccine does X, Y, and Z. It's safe. We've tested it a zillion times. All of that kind of stuff wouldn't come up. So it seems like, this is what comes up when I search about anti-vaxxers. Or, the conspiracy theory that Antifa was behind the wildfires in Oregon a couple weeks ago. Where did that come from? If that's not true, why do people believe it? It's because people heard on the radio that, or heard over like radio, not like radio like we're doing radio, but talking about BLM. But West Coast folks generally know that BLM, also, instead of standing for Black Lives Matter in this case, also stands for Bureau of Land Management. So there's like a faulty connection there, but like it makes sense why the Bureau of Land Management would be invoked in talking about wildfires.
The information desert versus, I think, a saturation of information,
Yeah, it can go both ways. Both of those can lead to conclusions that are incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm trying to like think about it for myself and people in my life that I need to have political conversations with, because it is a politically important time. But yeah, focusing on the facts, making sure that what I'm saying is easy to process, avoiding ridicule, which like headlines will do sometimes. Like major news organizations is like, this is a crackpot conspiracy theory, a ridiculous COVID conspiracy theory. It's like,
really, you know, just if you see things that are just so rude and so divisive, why right wingers are the most likely to believe fake news that are obviously fake, and they're fake, and they're this, and they're that. It's like, whoa, buddy. Why are you doing this?
You got to think about who's it for.
If it was the opposite, if I saw an article that said, like, that are like, why women are dumb, and I was like, whoa, buddy, whoa, you already know, we're already starting off bad here.
Yeah, I'm not ready to engage with that premise.
Because you're ready.
Avoiding ridicule. Yeah, and trying to figure out, you know, figuring out what are the questions that might come up for somebody if this is the first time they're hearing the truth from you, I think is something that I'm going to try to do. I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, I appreciate it. I mean, I got to say, you know, it's making me think back about what the caller was saying about, like, talking to someone in the language that they understand, basically, you know. If you're coming at someone and you're speaking Latin to them and they're, you know, like, don't speak Latin, you know, excuse me, they're like, you know, speaking Arabic or something, they're like, I don't understand what you're saying. And how are you even going to start having a you know, you just can't, you know, you come with, and the most interesting part, I think, in different cultures is the way that different cultures have, like, their either, like, fables or different types of phrases or puns and stuff that just don't land well, or, you know, just kind of like, what do you call those, like, kind of like cultural jokes and stuff and memes and stuff that just don't work in other cultures, you know? So it's like, how, you know, you can't really get mad at an American person watching, like, an Aussie show and not really finding it entertaining. Meanwhile, it's like, you know, number one in Australia. It's that cultural, you know, just everyone has their own culture and that's fine. But, you know, just kind of like, you know, talking to people in language you understand and the stories I understand and the, you know, and being ready to answer those questions, because, like you said, you're hitting them with a whole new reality. So you have to be ready to answer these questions of how did you, you know, of questions that might come from, you know, from somewhere where they don't necessarily trust you, or just like, you know, they're skeptics, as they should be, you know?
Right.
But to believe a fake narrative, a false narrative, and then to find that it's false, like, you know, we've all been there. We're like, what? Can't believe this. And it opens something up, but then it also closes something in you, I think.
I think it's also, like, good to think about being prepared for that conversation. Not to say that there aren't, you know, tough or political conversations that you can get ambushed by, because I've definitely been in that situation too. But, like, how can I be prepared and, you know, like, have these things at my disposal to be ready for what might come up from this person?
I'm glad that this is a conversation that we're doing, when, you know, a couple of weeks ago, there was so much more, it was just tense in the air. And I'm wondering if now, like, the larger discussion of debunking these things and, you know, actually having debates and, you know, that conversation taking more of conversation of having conversation, you know, taking a front step, you know, in people's daily lives. So I appreciate you, you know, sharing the, you know, debunking both in life and, you know, reading the news. Do you have this shared somewhere if people are interested in reading this text?
Yeah, I'll put it on the episode page for us. On if you go to kbu.fm and search up The Gap, I will list it all out for you to get prepped for those kind of conversations. I know I have a couple on my horizon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, October, almost November. Yeah, just, you know, we got to stay strong. It's going to be all good, I promise. We're just about done for today's show. Oh, so fast, so quickly. But we'll be back next week. Don't forget that if you like this type of programming and would like to support this type of programming in KBOO Community Radio, you can do so by going to kbu.fm/give. We're in the middle of the second half of our membership drive, so you can donate monetarily. We're definitely excited about getting new members coming in. You know, if you're new to town, if you're just tuning in, you know, for the first time, you know, and you want to read more and be able to support and do the stuff that, you know, that has been keeping us on the air for over 50 years, we really appreciate it. You go to kboo.fm in its first window pop up. You can go ahead and donate there. Althea, you have any last final thoughts?
I want to thank everybody for listening. Yeah, stepping into the weekend. That's exciting. I think I'm good. The president has coronavirus. Let's be cool about it. That's my final thought.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Not to open a can of worms on you, but, you know, we're not hoping for anything bad to happen to anybody on this show.
Yeah, well, I hope everyone gets well soon. Everyone get well soon. What happened?
Yeah, let's all be healthy.
Yeah.
Not sick, you know?
And
sick,
you know,
in the surfer bro language kind of way. That's sick, but not in the... Yeah. Anyway.
exactly. I hope that everyone has a great weekend. I hope that, we are all getting one step closer to being more neighborly, most importantly to ourselves, because that's the only way that it can be exuded onto others. Althea, it's really just great talking to you every week. And like you said, if people want more info, they can go to kbo.fm, donate there. You can look for The Gap, get more info on the show. Sonia, thank you so much. And we'll be back next week. This has been The Gap.
Thanks, all.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282B.